Okay, so for Mishnah Beis, what you have to know is that there's something called Meduma. Meduma is when you have a mixture of Chulin and Truma. Now remember, Chulin is when you have grain that you have taken off Trumas and Maasis from, so that grain that you are left with for yourself is called Chulin. It is perfectly kosher food for any Jew. Now, what happens, though, if you have a mixture of Truma and Chulin? So what we've discussed is that, let's say, you have three meatballs in front of you. One of them is treif, let's say it was from meat of an animal that wasn't shechted properly, and the other two are kosher meatballs. You can't tell the difference between any of them, they all look the same. What's the halacha? So the halacha is that you can follow the rov, you follow the majority. The majority dictates, since most of the meatballs in front of you are kosher, so you can presume that each meatball that you pick up is going to be kosher. And so we can deem the non-kosher meatball as null and void. However, that's only for that area of halacha when we're dealing with, let's say, meat from an animal that wasn't shechted properly. What about if we're dealing with truma? So the standards are a little bit higher for rov, for deeming the truma null and void when we're dealing with a mixture. Right, the mashal that I've given in the past is that when you have a little bit of pickle juice, let's say, that falls into a cup of chocolate milk, so if it's a tiny little drop of pickle juice, it's not going to bother you that there's a little bit in there. Right, but let's say we're dealing with a bowl of applesauce, and there's a little piece of glass that falls in. So then, even though it's a little piece of glass, and you have way more applesauce than the little piece of glass, that's irrelevant. You're still going to be concerned that you might have glass that you might be swallowing glass when you eat that bowl of applesauce. Now, it could be if you had a great big pot filled with applesauce and a tiny little piece of glass was in there somewhere, you might not be as concerned. So the rules for truma are a little bit more rigorous. Just like for other areas of halacha, we'll discuss klayim, arla. There are other for other areas of halacha, the rules are a little bit more rigorous. So when it comes to a mixture of chulin and truma, it takes a lot more chulin than truma in order for the truma to be deemed meaningless in halacha, that you can ignore the presence of the truma in it. And how much do you need? So we said you need 100 parts of chulin against the truma in order for there not to be an issue, in order for the truma to be considered meaningless in halacha. So what happens, though, if you don't have 100 parts of chulin against the truma? Then what we're dealing with is meduma. You're dealing with a duma, you're dealing with a mixture of truma and chulin, and you have to presume, you have to treat the entire mixture as though it's truma. So if you're a non-kohen, you're not allowed to eat it, and you'd have to sell it to the kohanim. So let's say you have two wives who got together to make a dough. Now, we know that if you make a dough out of truma flour, right? So if Aaron Cohen's wife receives a whole bunch of truma from their neighbor, then she does not have to take off challah when she makes a dough, right? Just like any other truma that she receives, you don't have to take off truma from truma. So she doesn't have to take off challah from truma. Challah is a kind of truma. So if Aaron Cohen's wife is making a dough from truma, and she gets together with her neighbor is a Yisraelis, she gets together and they're going to make a dough together. Now, if their flours get mixed in together, well, then we're dealing with a dimua. You're dealing with meduma. You're dealing with a mixture of truma and chulin. Well, the question is, if you're dealing with a mixture of truma and chulin, do you have to take off challah from that dough? In a similar vein, the second part of the Mishnah we're going to discuss is, what about, we know that you're not, if you have truma, you're not allowed to be metame truma, you're not allowed to contaminate truma, because that results in the truma being burned. So you're not supposed to cause truma to be destroyed. So challah, in a similar vein, you're not supposed to be metame challah, you're not supposed to contaminate challah in halacha, because you'd have to burn the challah, and challah is a kind of truma. The question is, though, What about if you have something that is suffik tuma? You have challah, you're not sure, it came into contact with something, it might be tamei. So can you treat it, once it might be tamei, can you treat it as tuma? Can you treat it as something that's contaminated already? Or do you have to treat it that, no, maybe it's not contaminated, and therefore you have to treat it in a state of tahor, right? What would be the, why would we care about that? Because let's say the pan that you want to bake this on is tamei. Let's say you have a metal pan and it's tamei. And if you put this challah onto this pan, well, you're going to make it definitely tame. Are you allowed to do that? So let's go through the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows. Number one, Nidama isasa achlo gilgla, if the dough got mixed up with, in other words, if you were dealing with a mixture of chuma and chulin, and you don't have 100 parts of chulin against the chuma, and that mixture occurred before Gilgal, achlo Gilgal, right? Until the Gilgal was not done. That's because that's the language for the Mishnah for saying until Gilgal happened. In other words, before Gilgal happened, there was a dimua, there was a mixture of chulin and chuma. Meaning to say, why do we care about Gilgal? Remember, Gilgal is the way of saying the final activity, the gemar malacha, for a dough when we're dealing with wheat flour. In other words, the full-fledged chiv of challah did not kick in, right? Once you do a gemar malacha for the dough, once you do Gilgal for wheat flour, that's when the chiv of challah kicks in. So now, if there was a mixture of dough, of chuma and chulin, and that mixture occurred before Gilgal happened, so petura, then it would be exempt from challah. So again, if we have Aaron Cohen's wife getting together with her neighbor to make a dough, and the dough gets mixed in, the two flours get mixed in, or the doughs get mixed in, before Gilgal occurs, they do not have to take off challah, because we're dealing with Meduma, and it was Meduma when the Chiv of Chala ultimately kicks in. And so because it was Meduma before and leading into the Chiv of when the Chiv of Chala would kick in, so it preempts the Chiv of Chala kicking in. Sha Meduma Pater, for if we're dealing with Meduma, Meduma is Pater from Chala. Umisha Gilgala, but if there was a mixture, if the mixture occurred once the Gilgal happened. In other words, Aaron HaKohen's wife makes a dough. That dough is made out of chuma, and her neighbor is a Yisraelis, and she makes dough out of chulin, and the two doughs get mixed in together. Or maybe they have flour. Aaron HaKohen's wife adds some flour to the Yisraelis' dough. Not thinking. So what would be the halacha? So if the dimua occurs after the Gilgal, so then chayavas, then she would have to take off challah. Why? Because there was already chiv of challah that kicked into the chulin dough. And so because the chiv of challah already kicked in, even though chuma ultimately got mixed in, it doesn't make a difference. There was already a chiv of challah, and so you'd have to take off challah from that dough. That's part one of the Mishnah. Part two is nolala safik tuma achlo gilgla. Now nolala, literally that means it was born to her. Now that's Chazal's language for when a safik arises, when there's some sort of doubt that we're uncertain, some sort of certain uncertainty arises. So we call that aleidas hasafik, the arising of a safik. When the uncertainty arises, so nolala safik tuma, when a uncertainty of tuma arises, achlo gilgla, before the gilgal occurs, before the gemar malacha occurs, before the chiv of challah kicks in, that dough can be done, can be made, can be treated as tuma. What that means is to say, you can make it with tuma. What that means is that once there is a leidas hasafik, the dough came into contact with something that might be tame, but it wasn't fully, there was no gemar malach yet, right? It wasn't fully kneaded dough. There was no gilgal yet. So can you make that dough on a pan, let's say, that is tame? And if you do that, you're going to make the dough vadai tuma, right? So is that an issue? The answer is no problem. You're allowed to make it vadai tame. Why are you allowed to make a vadai tame? The answer is because you're not looking at challah right now, right? The issue would be to make challah, when you're dealing with challah that's in front of you, you're not allowed to make challah tame, but you don't have challah in front of you. You have a regular run-of-the-mill dough. There's no challah in front of you, and there's no dough that's chayv in challah yet. So you're allowed to make that dough tameh. There's no problem with making that dough tameh, because anyway, the kohen is, because we're dealing with safek tuma, because we're dealing with the dough that there's an uncertainty about tuma, so the challah that you take off ultimately is also going to be a state of safek tuma. And because it's going to be in a state of safek tuma, the kohen himself is not going to be allowed to eat it anyway. So there's no problem of making that dough on a pan that's tameh. Umisha gilgala, but what about if the safek tuma occurred once the dough was fully formed, once there was a gemar malacha, once Gilgal was done? Well, then te'asa b'tahara, then it has to be made with tahara. What that means is that once you have a dough that's fully formed and there's a bona fide chiv of challah that has taken effect, you are not allowed to make it tameh, because as far as we're concerned, we're looking at a dough that has dormant challah in it. And so because we're looking at a dough that has dormant challah in it, you're not allowed to make challah tameh. You're not allowed to make it vadai tameh. And so therefore, that would be an issue, and you have to make it not on a pan that's tameh, you'd have to make it on a pan that's tar. Okay, so what do we say in this Mishnah? There were two parts to the Mishnah. Number one, if you have a mixture of chuma and chulin, you don't have to take off challah. The question is, at what point does the mixture of chulin and chuma have to occur? So the Mishnah tells us the mixture of chuma and chulin has to occur before Gilgal in order to preempt the chiv of chala. Once the dough has undergone Gilgal, so then if the mixture occurs afterwards, if there's a mixture of chuma and chulin after the Gilgal, so then there's a chiv of chala that has taken effect already and you'd have to take off chala. What about if there is a safek tumah? What if the dough came into contact with something, you're not sure if it was tameh? So then you would have to, are you allowed to make it tameh? Are you allowed to make it vadai tameh now? So the answer is it depends when the tumah occurred. If the safek tumah occurred before Gilgal, then you have to treat it, then you can make it tameh vadai. But if the safek tumah arose after Gilgal, well then you have to treat it with a state of tara. You can't make it vadai tameh. Okay.